Order. Questions for oral answer, Ms. Mariam Jaffa.
Mr. Speaker, may I have your permission to answer questions 1 to 4 together?
Go ahead.
My response will also address the oral questions 73 to 75 from the order paper on the 22nd of September 2025. Allow me to begin by putting the issue into perspective. The Minister of Health has previously explained the current state of private healthcare and insurance. Insurers, private hospitals and providers have got themselves tied up in a knot, resulting in escalating private hospital bills, rising premiums and more safeguards introduced to the claims process. The concerns raised by members point back to this deeper issue. A significant root factor is the design of private health insurance. Insurers know that policyholders are worried about unexpected large hospital bills, so they offer plans with generous coverage and benefits through integrated shield plans, IPs and riders, covering almost to the last dollar with little co-payment. But when someone else, in this case insurers, pays for almost the entire bill, the dynamic between patients and providers changes. There is tendency for over-servicing and unnecessary treatments. This is backed by data. The likelihood of a patient with a private hospital rider making a claim is 1.4 times that of a patient without a rider. The size of the claim is also on average about 1.4 times that of a patient without a rider. Rising private hospital claims put a strain on insurance. For IP portfolios to be sustainable, insurers raise premiums to cover claims. Policyholders have seen sharp increases in premiums for private hospital plans, namely IPs and riders. They also introduce more safeguards to manage claim costs, which helps insurers moderate the premium growth to some extent. So in response to the member's question, Mr. Fadli Fauzi is right that features such as S-charged expands coverage and contributes towards weakening the discipline of insurance claims. There are other features too, such as covering deductibles and co-payment, which also need to be looked at. But private healthcare insurance is in its current unsustainable state, not because of collusion or anti-competitive behaviour. That usually leads to super normal profits by market players at the expense of consumers. Here, insurers are either making losses or barely breaking even on their health portfolios. The situation is due to excessive competition that has gone wrong, another type of market failure. Mr. Yip Hong Wing and Ms. Mariam Jaffa ask if there could be new laws for stronger regulatory oversight. We already have a Competition Act to prescribe collusion and anti-competitive behaviour. If we strengthen regulatory oversight, it should be to correct the market failures arising from unsustainable and self-harming competition that have taken place today. Regulations to prevent insurers from correcting the current problem will likely exacerbate the situation, make private insurance even more unsustainable with no market correction mechanism. Should there be disputes over specific claims, policyholders can take it to the Financial Industry Disputes Resolution Centre, FITREC, an independent and impartial institution that assists with insurance-related disputes. The Monetary Authority of Singapore, MAS, will also take action against insurers if they do not pay claims in accordance with policy terms and conditions or have unfair claims handling practices. MOH will continue to work with MAS to exercise regulatory oversight over IP insurers and products. Members also ask about the practice of pre-authorisation. Pre-authorisation is an administrative arrangement, not a contractual benefit offered by insurers. It enables insurers to review and approve medical treatments and associated fees to make sure that they are medically necessary and covered by the policy before they occur. This arrangement also gives patients the assurance about what will be covered. Today, 5 of the 7 IP insurers provide pre-authorisation. Regardless of pre-authorization, IP policyholders enjoy their full contractual benefits and can still make claims for their treatments according to the terms and conditions of their policy. Panels are another means that insurers use to manage claim costs by ensuring that the doctors on the panel adhere to fee ranges set by the insurer. Seeing a panel doctor typically allows policyholders to enjoy more favourable co-payment terms. All policyholders remain entitled to their full contractual benefits, even if they seek care from a non-panel doctor. Most insurers have at least 600 patient private specialists on their panels. MOH monitors insurers' practices and works with them to ensure adequate panel coverage at the overall and speciality level. With extended panels, most IP insurers also allow policyholders to access doctors on other IP insurers' panels subject to review. The trends we see: escalating costs, premiums, tightening claims management practices are consequences and symptoms of the knot that insurers, doctors, hospitals and policyholders are caught in. Regulation will not loosen this knot. It will make it worse. If we restrict insurers' claims management practices, we will likely see even larger premium increases. And if we cap premium increases, products will become unviable, which will hurt policyholders. So we need to loosen and untie this knot step by step. Every stakeholder needs to do its part, and MOH will facilitate the process. We've urged the insurance industry, to relook their overly generous policy design, such as minimal rider co-payment. Insurers will need to balance between providing assurance and protection and encouraging prudent consumption and servicing. We will do more to educate consumers on choosing the appropriate health insurance coverage for their needs. We are in fact launching a public education campaign soon. To rein in sector cost increases, MOH has developed and published over 2,800 fee benchmarks, which providers and insurers reference to set fees and review reimbursements respectively. We will study what more can be done to guide fee setting by private hospitals. MOH will also continue to work through the Multilateral Healthcare Insurance Committee, MHIC, which brings together key stakeholders from healthcare providers, medical professionals, insurers, and consumer representatives to address these issues collaboratively.
Mr. Yip Hong Wing.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I thank the MOS for her response. Many Yio Chu Kang seniors who have been faithfully paying their premiums are now worried that with the sudden rule changes, like the new pre-authorization requirements, it could disrupt their ongoing treatments. Could the MOS explain what safeguards are in place to ensure that existing policyholders, especially seniors who are in the midst of treatments, are not disadvantaged by such unilateral insurer decisions? And secondly, some of these residents have also asked me, if an insurer delays or rejects a pre-authorization without good reason, what recourse do they have? And I hear from the MOS that fee benchmarks are being published, but will the ministry also consider publishing data on insurer performance, such as approval rates, turnaround times, appeal outcomes, so that Singaporeans can see whether insurers are acting in their best interests? Thank you.
MOS Rahayu.
Thank you, Member, for your question. I just want to clarify, though, that we are discussing this matter in the context of the Integrated Shield Plans. And as you appreciate, the Integrated Shield Plan is a term insurance, very much like typical insurance policies. It's a term insurance which only goes towards coverage for the duration of the term. So if your residents are in a situation where they're within that period of their term and they then meet the requirements and the criteria for their claims, I do not see why they would be affected by anything, because they lie in the bed they make, the contract that they have signed within that contractual period. When you talk about pre-authorization, as I explained earlier, it's a slightly different animal. It is not part of the term of the, it's not part of the terms and condition. It's an administrative process. It actually allows for treatments that are pre-planned, hospitalization or surgery that is coming up, for patients or policyholders to get confirmation to see whether this treatment is something that their insurers would pay for. What we hear, what we understand typically, that if there is rejection, it's possibly because there is an exclusion in the original contract, so you couldn't have gotten it covered anyway, or the fees are too high, the treatment plan may be too aggressive, means you have not considered other treatment plans. But it still doesn't take away from the fact that if you do then consume a treatment and it falls within your contract, you can still claim from your insurance. It's just that, you know, there was no pre-authorization. And the sort of recourse, so if let's say you submit a pre-authorization claim and, you know, it is rejected or, you know, in that recent case suspended, it just means that you need to consider, you need to consider your options, because if you feel that that treatment, you know, you accept the reason that the treatment is aggressive or it is not covered, then you may need to consider whether you want to choose an alternative treatment. Or if you feel that actually that is a treatment that's purely covered, you can go ahead and you will then have to make the claim subsequently. And the insurers, honestly, if it is just there can still be disputes, of course, you know, as with other similar grounds, but there is very little leverage. There's going to be back and forth, but there is lesser leverage for the insurers to reject, because if it is truly is something that is circumscribed by the contract, then there's no running away from having to pay out according to the terms of the contract.
Mr. Vikramna.
Yes, I thank the MOS for the explanation and the plans in this complex area, because I agree that the greater the insurance coverage, the more likely the cost will be to escalate. But I think I have two clarifications on this. One, is the ministry looking at any regulatory measures to make sure that, say, healthcare providers do not use insurance as an opportunity to overcharge? And this may include disciplinary proceedings and so on. The second is from the point of view of the insurance users. Now, I take the MOS's point that this is a contract, but in practical terms, quite often the people who buy insurance policies do so on standard terms. They don't negotiate it, and they don't really have that option to go to a different insurer so readily once they've been in a contract for a certain period of time. So I think there is an element of consumer protection that needs to go in as well. So even though the insurance is renewed yearly, if the coverage does get worse, I think, you know, the ministry should have some guidelines on when it will step in to protect consumers. Thank you.
MOS Rahayu.
On the first question, I actually just want to assure the member that we take a multi-pronged approach in trying to deal with this matter. Our conversations and discussions and engagements with insurers on their insurance design, product design is one, but we are also looking at different elements, including introducing fee benchmarks, which we have done since 2018. We have introduced benchmarks for private professional fees, and this guides the pricing and guards against overcharging. So it does, there are some levers here. We are actually now studying the possibility of going beyond professional fees by introducing more benchmark for hospital charges to guide fee setting by private hospitals. So that is one measure in which we are trying to do. Separately, related to your second point, it is also about consumer education. And that's also another aspect of the work that we are doing. I mentioned earlier that we're going to be embarking on the public education campaign. It is really about explaining and providing information to policyholders about the different options they have, how they should calculate what coverage they need versus how much they want to spend on now, because sometimes just over coverage and you're not really actually going to be consuming it, it's not going to be good for you. So education should also entail them appreciating what are some of the options they have, so they don't get caught up in a particular situation which is not feasible for them. And you had the last part. So basically, it is really about trying to ensure that consumer protection is something that is top of mind. Regulatory, I think that was one of the things that you asked about, is about regulatory measures. It's not that it's not without any regulatory measures. Right now, MOH and MAS work together to actually look at how we can we have intervened in recent years to improve consumer fairness and protection, but we have also already in place regulatory measures to ensure that the insurance providers keep to certain key parameters. Because for IPs, for example, they actually tap on the MediSafe as part of the payments. And so we have levers to make sure that they comply with the different parameters that we require of them in terms of riders, in terms of co-payments. So ultimately, at the end of the day, it is all about making sure that there is consumer protection, but it must be done in a fashion that is meaningful, that actually helps the situation rather than exacerbate it.
Dr. Hamid Raza.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, sir. I'd like to declare my interest as a practicing orthopaedic surgeon in the private sector, and I'd like to thank MOS Rahayu for clarifying. On the issue of extended panels, from what I understand, there are differences in practice between insurance companies. For example, the extended panel benefit could be by way of contract, which then means that if the pre-authorization is withdrawn, the benefits will still reach the patient or the consumer. However, if the extended panel benefits are by pre-authorization, then unilateral decisions by insurance companies to stop pre-authorization would mean that these benefits do not reach the consumer or the patient. So I hope that the ministry, when in the process of untying the knot and in discussion with the companies, will look at these varying practices between the insurance companies and really look at it from a point of access to care from the consumer's perspective in untying the knot, essentially. Thank you.
MS Rahayu.
Thank you for the question. Indeed, the commitment is about consumer protection and ensuring a sustainable system that can be meaningfully tapped on when policyholders or patients want to have options. So I just want to make a distinction between the measures or regulatory efforts that goes towards the protection versus administrative matters that actually helps insurers deal with this issue. I've explained earlier that pre-authorization and also panel empanelment of doctors is a way for insurers to actually manage their costs, manage their claims. Because with panels, how it works is that the usually there is an additional rider, right, that the patient or policyholder can tap on top of the coverage. And because of that, there is a need for the insurers to make sure that they're limiting their exposure of cost. And they put in then a panel. And that panel has, at the back end, some arrangements of fees with the insurers. So that's how the system works. And in a way, it is a mechanism for the insurers to manage their costs. So on MOHs and MAs apart, we work closely to exercise regulatory oversight so that IP insurers protect the interests of policyholders and that their products are sustainable. And as I mentioned earlier, there are certain parameters which we look at, but IPs and riders are private products and they have to compete. Insurers have to compete in a competitive market. So our general practice is to avoid intervening on aspects that are integral to market competition, such as this, such as premium, such as service quality. So while we have an eye out to consumer protection, we do make sure that we allow for the insurers to also use the certain mechanisms to get themselves out of the situation. To also allay your concerns, there is a requirement for notification if they actually change their terms and condition. And so that's another layer. They are actually made to inform their policyholders on it. And there are also opportunities if there are indeed disagreements. The policyholders can reach out to FIDRAC to have their disputes resolved.
Ms. Mariam Jaffa.
Thank you for all the explanations. I understand that it's a really tight, difficult knot to crack. I have a few PQs, but I'll make them short. I think, first of all, on fairness and patient interests, I think patients really care that right now, after paying for... Many of them have been paying for a very long time. It's an annual product, but they've been paying for years and years and years. And now they see premiums rising and they're facing more exclusions and tighter panels. So how is MOH ensuring that patient protection actually is at the heart of the regulatory framework rather than insurers' profits? Second, you mentioned about education of the consumer. I think part of education involves transparency. If insurers' premiums include administrative costs, including the costs around the panels that you were talking about, and their profits are not actually quite visible to patients, will MOH require clearer disclosures so that patients can make more informed choices about the value of their coverage? Third, since MOH currently relies on persuasion rather than statutory authority over the private IP component of the integrated shield plans, how can patients be assured that insurance cannot prioritise profits over their interests? And related to that, MediShield Life is tightly regulated by law, so a lot of basic IP protections are there. But is MOH considering stronger statutory powers over the private portion of IPs to better protect patients? And you mentioned that patients can also go to FIDREC for if they have any disputes. But FIDREC, of course, the name itself suggests that the primary lens there is financial. And so would MOH be open to a separate panel that also looks at it more from a health and patient protection standpoint?
MOS Rahayu?
To respond to the question by the member, I just want to reiterate again the points that I make, because I think the sentiment is really about wanting to make sure that our policyholders and patients who are going through very difficult situations are not shortchanged or disadvantaged because of unsavoury practices by the insurance providers. And I just want to give that blanket assurance that that is indeed something that we need to look at, and that there are already efforts in place for us to address that. What I do want to reiterate is that the manifestation of some of the issues that we are seeing today in terms of escalating costs and premiums is not necessarily completely resolved by just regulation alone. There are many different dimensions of it, and I mentioned earlier that we are taking a multi-pronged approach to deal with this matter. Perhaps just allow me to recap and elaborate a little bit more. As explained, we take a multi-pronged approach. One of the approach is really about having that discussion with insurance providers to make sure that they review their insurance policy design product. Separately, we're also putting in benchmarks, fee benchmarks against to protect against overcharging and guide the pricing, because it's also about how much is charged versus how much they're going to claim. We also put in place measures to enforce against a small minority of doctors who actually make errant claims, because they are the ones then who then put in the wrong claims and you end up, you know, ballooning the claims. So there is a claims management office that sets up the claims rules and puts through a claims education process, and we're also continuing to drive efforts to improve awareness of these claims practices. We are also contemplating setting up more private hospital options, especially affordable ones, very much like Mount Alvernia, and we are exploring the possibility of new not-for-profit private hospital. And these are some of the efforts that we are going to do, but even if we do this decision, it will take a few years. So what I'm trying to demonstrate is that there are many different dimensions that we're looking at in terms of trying to undo this knot, in terms of trying to reduce the claims, because it's an ecosystem. It is not just about them not... it's not just about the rising costs. We have to appreciate that the rising claims or the rising premiums costs is as a result of increased claims, is as a result of consumption, and excessive one at that, and it's as a result of overcoverage. So these are the things that we need to unpack. Therefore, some of the proposals or suggestions that you put up is indeed something that we consider. We already have levers. MAS, MOH have levers in terms of oversight to ensure that the practices and the product design is something that's sustainable and ensures protection. There are avenues for the policyholders and claimants to actually make claims. FIDREC is one part of it, but there are dimensions of whether it is actually the holistic assessment of whether that claims is necessary is something that they will have to take into account as well. We will continue with the education so that people have more choices. We will consider proposals of putting in more information so that people can make a judgment call and better decisions. But we need to do so meaningfully. And these are things that we will continue to do to improve on this issue of rising healthcare costs as well as rising premiums.
Last SQ, Mr. Partley Palsy.
I have three SQs. Firstly, given that healthcare expenditure has been rising quickly, at what point will the government consider disallowing insurers for providing S-charge coverage for non-cancer treatments? Secondly, given that since 2018, there still has been rapidly escalating healthcare costs, does that suggest that the private industry is not compliant with the guidelines? And thirdly, I think MOS mentioned that MOH is also studying the creation of other benchmarks. I'm wondering if MOS can clarify if the benchmarks will be for costs like the cost of consumables like hospital gowns, meals consumed by patients, to limit the size of insurance claims. That's all. Thank you.
MOS.
Thank you for the question. I worry that as we are discussing these issues, we run the risk of conflating many different issues together. There are many different dimensions and contributions towards increasing healthcare costs, including also an aging demography and an increased burden of chronic diseases. And at a larger level, there are a lot of things that MOH has to do to address the costs. And this is also in the space of putting in healthy SG, you know, doing upstream efforts, making sure screening is in place, making sure our people are healthy. And there's a whole slew of efforts that we're putting in place to arrest the increased healthcare costs. This particular situation that we are debating here today really relates to a different dimension. It is about how people are consuming products. It's about how the insurance system works. It is about the design of the insurance product. And it is making sure that the different stakeholders in this ecosystem are aware that they all need to do their part. MOH will continue to facilitate this process. And I think it is important for us to appreciate that it is not just about putting in regulation. It is not just about putting in the rules, because we do need to assess. Some of the suggestions that members have raised here today is something we need to assess, because it may cause a reverse effect. There are measures and ways in which insurance companies will need to address some of their costs to remain sustainable. We need to make sure that those efforts then do not undermine the protection fairness and transparency to the policyholders. So that's something that we will continue to manage. We will take in the suggestions and we will continue to review it. But the issue is really about making sure that everyone in the ecosystem plays a part. You had asked specifically about the benchmarks that I mentioned earlier. I do not have details at this juncture, but we already had benchmarks on the professional fees. We are looking at how we can also create some benchmarks on the hospital's costs, which would probably include some of the elements you mentioned.